I have been a fan of your work since we had the luxury, I would say, to have bumped into each other at Spike Island Studios in Bristol, where you also have your studio. And but also it was one of those meetings where I had actually seen your work on my friend's kitchen wall, because you have a very beautiful poster, which is a collaboration with Young and Conway. The title of it, they are Tides in My Body, which was
In the body, yeah.
in the body. Yeah, thank you. Which I also have a copy. I just wanted to actually touch upon that piece of work for a second, because it's a collaboration with graphic designers. And do you want to share a little bit about how it came about?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, I guess it was the early days of this current research project that I'm working on. And Conway and Young, incredible artist designers based at Spike Island, invited me to collaborate with them. And they had found this incredible font, which a font designer had taken from some protest posters from some sanitation workers from the 1960s. So it had this kind of link to kind of the history of sanitation and sanitation labour. And they found this font and they were like, we want to use it for something. We know you're working on wastewater and sanitation infrastructure. Do you want to make something together? And so I was thinking about what text might be relevant, and this quote, "There are tides in the body," which is actually Virginia Woolf from Mrs. Dalloway, but it's in the foreword of Astrida Nomanis's Bodies of Water, and it just feels like it really encapsulates lots of the thinking that I was doing at the time around kind of thinking about our connections to water and the waters that flow through us and connect us. And then the poster itself was printed using mud from the River Avon that we collected very diligently and then processed. And then so it's a screen printed poster. It's very simple. You can get one on my website if you want to buy a copy. And yeah, so we process the mud so then it can be like screen printed with. So it's yeah, so it has a relationship to our river, the river next to our studio. But yeah, so that's the background.
No, it's beautiful, and I love the way that actually, even when you don't know that the color of the font, in a sense, and the texture of it has come from the river, you can actually sense that very viscerally
Yeah.
when you actually see it. So it's a very beautiful piece of work, and I'm actually really happy that we open this session describing a piece of work before I do a formal introduction, which is actually very apt, I think, to this tidalistic kind of approach that has been forming across these conversations. But welcome, Bryony, your artist researcher carrying out your PhD at Plymouth University, and here to have a chat about some of that work on and research on wastewater, as you mentioned, that graphic poster being sort of a starting point. But your summer has been quite packed, I have to say, with, as you said, completing the film that is the, I guess, the final part of the. Sorry, we've just had a message to say that the audio is crackling. That could be connections. I hope that that's. I'm going to continue. Okay, thank you, Felipe. Thanks, Megan. Thank you, Danny. Okay, just good to check in here. But Bryony, first of all, let's talk a little bit about the summer. You spent it editing, as you mentioned, or we mentioned the work Outfall, and also you were at the Colby Summer Institute in Environmental Humanities, which I would really like to hear a little bit about, because please tell, you know, those who are tuning in about that opportunity, because it, I think, also connects deeply to our work here at WSA in Southampton Uni, where, of course, environmental media and the elements is a key aspect of many people's work.
Yeah, sure. So the Colby Summer Institute in Environmental Humanities is a week-long program at Colby College in Maine in the USA. It's been going since I think 2022. And it's an incredible 7-day program which brings together academics from all over the world who are working in the environmental humanities. So the breadth of kind of disciplines is very, it's very broad. The emphasis of the week, and I think one of the reasons this is one of the reasons it's so amazing, is that the emphasis of the week is on work in progress and sharing work in progress. So everyone who's there, and there's normally about 40 fellows at different kind of points in their careers, come together to kind of workshop something that they haven't published yet, which is really exciting. And then there are four invited professors who are kind of, leading in the field of environmental humanities. So I was working with Macarena Gomez Barris, but also I know, I think you mentioned Teresa, that Nicole Storiosielski, sorry, I'm so bad at pronouncing names, has a connection to some of the work that you guys have done before. And then Mishwana Goman and Nicole Seymour. So we have these kind of professors that are there leading keynotes and seminars, but also kind of leading smaller groups through workshopping work in progress. But also the professors are also invited to share work in progress themselves, which kind of is a really, it's just a really interesting way of kind of keeping everybody at the on the same, kind of getting rid of hierarchies, I guess. And there are field trips. I'd highly recommend. It's just an incredible week of discourse and just connecting with really, really fascinating people working in the environmental humanities.
Yeah, no, thank you. And thank you for sharing that kind of summary of the process. Did you share Outfall as part of that work?
Yes, I did. I did. And I was in some ways quite nervous because most people are sharing a paper or a part of the end of their PhD or something from their first monograph. So sharing a film felt and it was very much encouraged to share artwork. It felt a little bit I felt quite vulnerable, but yeah, I shared the first cut of this film that I've made, which is I guess the output of my PhD. And it was really useful, and it was actually really useful to be in a context which wasn't just within people working in contemporary art, actually.
Yeah, great. And I guess speaking about this piece of work, so I had the privilege to also see, I guess, still a working draft, because I know that you're editing, further edits are to happen. But the piece, speaking, and the reason we're chatting also, not just because of its relation to your PhD work, but also the aesthetic kind of considerations that you have in terms of the piece opens at the moment. Essentially, with a bit of water maintenance work, someone trying to unplug a toilet. And that level of sort of maintenance and infrastructural maintenance and the implications of that infrastructural maintenance is sort of like a central theme in the piece, which is a video art piece that's shot in a way. Characteristic of your work, I would say, close camera shots, body, a lot of kind of close-ups of the body and landscape, and voice over, and a really wonderful use of sound in many ways. So it becomes sort of these performative video works that bring you into these sort of layers of sense, is what I would probably sort of say. What was the impetus for creating this piece of work in the start at the start, and what was the link in kind of opening with with maintenance?
With maintenance, so I've been conducting this research over, I guess, the last 3 years, and many of the people that I've interviewed and spoken with about wastewater have had a relationship to maintenance of infrastructure, whether that's people working for the water companies. And then in the case of this film, I worked closely with a plumber, just because it felt really important to kind of understand the domestic kind of scale of sanitation infrastructure. And I guess one of the things that I'm really interested in when it comes to thinking about maintenance in the context of sanitation is that, just like the infrastructure itself, it's designed to be invisible. So we don't really think about how our bathrooms work and how our toilets work generally until something goes wrong with them, right? And so working with this plumber, Lewin, Was a way of kind of thinking, like pulling back the curtain, I guess, and revealing the kind of the physical labor that goes on behind keeping these systems going. So in the film, Lewin is actually ripping out a bathroom suite. It's called the first fit, in plumbing speak. So they're kind of doing this very physical, dirty, sweaty work of taking out the toilet, and there are these kind of parts of the toilet that you can see inside and see traces of bodily waste within them. And I guess in doing that, it's a way of bringing together differing scales. So thinking about like both the intimate and the infrastructural, but maintenance, keeps coming back into the work all the way through.
Yeah, we might get a bit of a chance to return that to that, but in a way, I guess then following that pipes and following that infrastructure allows you to follow then this wastewater, and we sort of then go with that flow, so to speak, and it takes us to a sort of the second movement in the video work, which is about your walk with your dog around the particular direction that you've taken, because you link that fixing and plumbing to actually the sewerage works that you start to walk because you need to have a quieter spot to walk the dog, and that's also to do with your dog's the dog's health and also your own needs as well. But then we get introduced to the mystery smell, which is like kind of almost like a spoiler alert for anyone that might see this work at a future point, because it's premiering quite soon, correct?
It is right, yeah. It'll open in a solo exhibition in on the 19th of September. I can send a link if anyone's
Yeah, that would be
interested.
great. And actually, I'll just drop your web link there as well, so because people can actually pick it up from there at the moment as well. The mystery smell then takes us, I guess, into the really heart of the matter that is the video work, which again, as I mentioned, loops back into sort of maintenance. But at the same time, thank you, Bryony, for the link there. It becomes dark, in a sense, is what I would sort of say, because you can't figure out what this sort of smell is, but you bump into an engineer, a sewerage engineer worker, if I can remember correctly, and you ask them what's this sort of smell, because it's also the dog is obviously picking it up as well. So you get all these entanglements that start to play out in a way while we are getting also this reoccurring image, which is very beautiful, of somebody just washing a fish and cleaning the fish, and this intimacy of actually food and thinking then again further about, you know, where this water is coming from. But the location, before we go into the kind of the details of the mystery smell, where exactly was it shot? Because I was kind of curious about this and we haven't had a chance to talk about it.
Yeah, sure. So I filmed almost exclusively in the southwest of England. I've done a lot of research at water treatment sites, but there isn't actually any footage that I filmed there in the film itself, just because of kind of
Yeah.
tricky, complicated relationships with private water companies, which I can go into in a minute. So it's filmed in Somerset, Devon, and Cornwall, and that was partly to do with that's where I'm based, and that's where I was able to build connections with people. So working with the flood plumber and the dogs, there are some dogs in the film which are dogs that are owned by a water company, and they're trained to detect leaks in water systems, which is a
How
whole
interesting.
new type of technology which is being used, a nature-based solution to a problem that we have in the UK, where we're losing huge amounts of drinking water, but also wastewater through our failing infrastructure, because we have a very problematic system here. But yeah, so there was a kind of a necessity to film the Southwest in terms of building relationships, but also it felt really important to cite it there because Southwest Water, which is our private water company who manages most of the water in the Southwest, is one of the worst ranked offenders in terms of releasing untreated sewage into the seas and waterways. And probably just as a little caveat for those listening outside of the UK, it might not be known, it might be because there's been quite a lot of stuff in the media, but the UK has a very, very unusual and unique context in that all of our water is privatized. We're actually the only country in the world who has completely privatized water, which is wild. And it's something that's been going on since Thatcherism, since 1989. And essentially, as you can imagine, companies owning our water are owned by private equity. Thatcher described, no, not Wales and Scotland, England, sorry, England specifically. In 1989, Thatcher brought in the Water Act, which she described as a shareholder democracy. And the idea was that anyone who was able to could potentially buy shares of water companies. But obviously, what happened very quickly was those shares were bought up by private equity companies. And then, systematically, in the decades since, those companies have extracted capital, leveraged debt, and significantly underinvested in infrastructure. So we have a so there's no, there's there are many reasons why I was thinking about the Southwest, but also the wastewater research I've done is very specific to the UK, and I think it's always really important to mention that because even when I was in the States earlier this summer, I didn't realize that in the US most of their water is owned publicly, and so it's just a very, very different situation than we have in England specifically.
And I think that that has also been coming up in popular TV. I'm thinking about the Channel 4
Absolutely.
film that was out recently that was also regarding the sort of the sewage that was dumped in systematically for years, and the former professors, I can't remember if they're in Cambridge or Oxford, who ended up sort of doing the citizen science piece of work to actually kind of like show how the death of the river was happening. And in a way, then this sort of consciousness that you have of this and these infrastructural issues, I guess, are vibrant then when you're walking in a landscape, because they're somehow there consciously or subconsciously at the tips of your fingers. But then this sort of smell, do you want to go into the
Yeah, sure, the mystery
reveal?
smell. So yeah, as Therese's just been describing, I can send you guys a link to the film when it's finished, but the kind of the main component of the work at the moment is this kind of this narrative, this story told by this incredible actor, Mary Woodfine. And it's a story which is fictionalized from personal experience. It's not my direct experience, but it's based on interviews that I conducted and also tours that I have had of wastewater sites. So it's kind of partially fictionalized away from me. I guess Mary in the film is kind of my proxy. So it's kind of based on things that happened to me, but not quite. I've had to slightly anonymize just in terms of kind of the ethics of the work. So in the film, Mary is describing walking her dog, her elderly dog, on a marshland that's right adjacent to a wastewater treatment site. And she's going there because it's quiet, and it's quiet because it's next to a sewage works. And she realizes that there's this very strange smell emanating from the wastewater treatment site, and it's not what you'd initially expect it to be. It's not shit that she can smell. She can smell shit, but there's something else. And she becomes kind of obsessed with this smell and trying to figure out what it is. And she has an encounter with someone who's working at the wastewater treatment site. And they reveal to her that the smell that she can smell is actually detergent. And where the wastewater treatment site is located is in a kind of a coastal community. It's in a kind of a seaside place where there are lots of tourists in the summer. And there's an influx of people who are using hotels, holiday homes. There's huge amounts of washing of bedding and bodies and caravans going on, and huge amounts of detergent are entering the water. And the wastewater treatment process, it does a good job of removing most things. We can maybe talk a little bit more about this in a minute. Despite all of the processes that the water goes through, there is still this incredibly pungent smell coming from the water, even as it enters the outfall and leaves the wastewater treatment site. And this is something that happened to me. It happened on a tour that I took of a wastewater treatment site, and the tour guide asked me if I could identify what I was smelling. And which was, and again, I was like, I can smell shit, but it's strong. And so it started basically the mystery smell becomes a device to talk about all of the materials which are running through our bodies, our industrial processes, our sanitation systems, which are mostly invisible, mostly don't have a smell, but we are living with continually and all of the time. And some of them might be as innocuous as detergent, but obviously in detergent and in fragrances, there are potentially harmful chemicals which are linked to hormone disrupting materials. And this is something that the protagonist in the film kind of thinks about. She's on long-term sick leave, she has hormone responsive tumors in her body, and she starts thinking about the relationship between these substances and her own sickness and what's going on there.
Thank you for sharing that, because it's it's again, I'm finding it always really interesting how in a conversation you are describing in detail work and moving beyond then the descriptive into these approaches and methods, I guess, that you are using, which I would also see as characteristic of your work, because I had the chance to also see some of your other video works at Spike Island's recent opening. And this idea of proxies and narratives and devices and performance identities that I sometimes feel I'm just talking to different versions of Bryony, or different experiences of Bryony in and different fantasies that you hold of life, and also kind of aware that you shared of your own trajectory with body and health and so forth. How can you expand a little bit on how those techniques work for you, or how you have been, developing them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I guess, yeah, in terms of the kind of the personal and the self, I suppose as someone who's disabled and neurodiverse, like my work is greatly informed by kind of by crip theory, and thinking about how crip theory can kind of enter into my methodological approach. I guess it's like it like my own experiences of like influence how I think about the ways in which bodies perceive or like navigate environments differently, and how those differences can actually be knowledge rather than the limitations. And in terms of the fictioning that happens, so the story in the film is now completely fictionalized, but it started as, yeah, a very personal piece of writing that I wrote and was a performance that I performed myself. And I think, I guess, when it comes to my writing, I'm always thinking about like what's right for the context, and for something where I wasn't putting my own body into it, it felt kind of more relevant, and it felt like the right thing to do for it to become something which was, yeah, told through a proxy rather than told through myself. And I guess I'm always thinking about when it's appropriate for me to be present and myself to be present in the work, and when it's appropriate for some kind of distancing to be going on, especially when I'm thinking about things which, potentially make me quite vulnerable. So I guess, yeah, so I guess there's something around that.
And also the way that you work with sound and other actors and other musicians, because your work often explicitly reveals those that are, let's say, creating the soundtrack, either by, choosing the musicians in the landscape, or creating these sonic ruptures that really bring your attention away from the visual and away from the narrative to this sonic moment in the work. And then, and again, I think I want to go back to the fish, but just talk a little bit about
Yeah,
the work of
sure.
sound and how that plays
Yeah.
out for you.
So I think I'm constantly sort of aiming to make moving image works that go beyond the visual. For me, yes, sound is somewhere that, in terms of my edit, it's where I start. I think about editing very much as like
Interesting.
a form of improvisation. I always describe it as that, like thinking about my, yeah, the experiences I've had being involved in free improvisation with voice and body, that kind of comes into my, I guess, the way I approach editing. So I really think about like responding to the material, listening what it has to what it has to tell me, and that often starts with sound. In terms of the sound in the film that I've just made, I worked with three incredible musicians and improvisers, Sarah Sin, Tina Hitchens, and Joe Kelly, who are all based in Bristol. Who are multi-instrumentalists, and I took them to a water recycling centre So not a sewage works, a site where they are treating drinking water before it goes into our pipes and comes to our homes. Just because there were kind of logistics, health and safety issues with taking a great number of people and instruments to somewhere where there's raw sewage. So we went to this water recycling centre. We had a tour of the site. We talked about the conceptual framing of the work. I showed them footage that I was working on. We read excerpts of theoretical texts. I gave them kind of key terms that I was working with, and then they embarked on a series of improvisations, kind of responding sonically to the project, but also the sight and the sounds and the processes that they'd been witnessing. And so the score for the film is made up of this series of these short improvisations that these three incredible musicians who hadn't all played together before played for me. And then I guess, yeah, in the edit, I'm then sort of kind of composing it, but taking this incredible material that's been offered to me by these collaborators. And it's a way that I've worked quite regularly, this way of kind of like opening up my practice, inviting others in, specifically people with sound practices, and then like taking that material and, as I said, like thinking about it as a form of improvisation in the edit.
Yeah, I think that's really it really comes across, and it's just interesting to hear actually how I guess we could even have a whole session with you to talk about just improvisation techniques and how that actually kind of works. But one of the things I wanted to go back to and circle back to before we sort of close really is this. You the narrative refers to Rob Nixon's slow violence, and Nixon's work has sort of come up a couple of times in references over the last couple of sessions that we've done on the water sessions, particularly Margarita Mendez's work, which I know that you also had a sort of a sync with. How has that position influenced your thinking? For those that might not know Rob Nixon's work, it's a book around slow violence relating to the not perceivable kind of large scale disasters that we have, but that actually there's a slow poisoning that kind of happens with toxics that is not necessarily registered with the big bang, and that's sort of what slow violence is, and that often is. It often manifests over time as a kind of a gradual build up, and the people that affects are often in poorer conditions than others. So there's also this sort of one could call it the class situations that start to play out. It would when that point of reference is coming, I can't remember exactly now when it's in the film, but we see this reoccurring image of the fish being cleaned, and of course this deep sense, the horror that you are sort of articulating in this slowness, which is reflected in this question the woman starts to have about their hormone imbalance, but it's also then in the fish's body, because the fish is obviously not with the same thickness of skin and the same barriers that we that humans have. So you really start to sort of like feel the horror show in a way, which I think has been referenced already in the chat. Yeah, share a little bit of your thinking there, and what kind of, since you have shared the edit, where is it now, and how you kind of, I guess, cleaning it up a little bit, so to speak, for this particular premiere screening.
Oh, cleaning up or making it dirtier. This is the thing. I guess, yeah. Obviously, thinking about Nixon's interpretation of slow violence has been really important in terms of, as you were saying, like thinking about these temporal lags, these unequal body burdens, in relation to, like, I guess what we could call life under chemical saturation. And someone that's been really useful in terms of framing my thinking is the way that Michelle Murphy talks, has this term alter life. I don't know if you've come across it, but she talks about like the fact that many forms of life are already transformed by the fact that there is already ongoing chemical exposure and like historical industrial toxicity. And I guess in the same way that Nixon's slow violence kind of shifts things rather than one from one big spill to this kind of the ordinary conditions of living with like persistent contamination. And so this work has been, like making this film and where the PhD research has kind of ended up is really very much about like thinking about how we exist with toxicity. And I suppose in the film, like thinking about a fish body and this woman's body and these dogs using their, smell sensorial technology to sense toxicity. I guess I'm trying to find ways of engaging with these ideas, which like are difficult to get our heads around, and also there's no kind of conclusion or way of coming to terms with it. And even in I'll send you guys a link to the film, but film itself doesn't even really feature that much wastewater. There are all these other kind of like figures that the toxicity, stories of toxicity, are being told through, rather than actually, just showing you a pipe full of shitty water.
I think that one of the things that really struck me, and I guess to come to a close, was actually, while Nixon's turn of phrase might be well known in some academic circles, the articulation of that phrase and the kind of continued understanding of it from a sort of citizen public perspective, I think, is the stuff that's still quite shocking. We talk about microplastics and the influence they have, and we talk about, the influences of toxins in environment in different ways, but actually the broader non-scientific, effective kind of ways in which these things are actually maybe creating inquiry and problems that one has to solve, or entanglements that one has to reconcile with, or conflicts that one has to live through, are kind of part, it seems, of kind of contemporary life, too, strangely. So to say that is already a bit of a thing, I think, a weight, to a burden to hold, and how do you then step through that? And I just want to congratulate you on your work, because I,
Thanks.
for me, it is it allows one to enter into that very complex scenario with a lightness that actually doesn't stray away from the realities that those things confront one with. And wishing you all of the best for the premiere,
Thank
and
you.
hope to make it there. And I know that some of our colleagues, particularly those that were joining us from the Center for Critical Image and Infrastructure and Politics group, will probably be quite interested actually in hearing more about your work. And it would be really maybe nice to see if we could figure out a way to invite you for a screening at Winchester. We have a meeting later on today, and I think it would resonate. And Meg, who's one of the directors of that organization, where it was a research group, was on the call but had to leave. But I want to say thank you, and
Great,
likewise, I think
thank
it would be
you.
really wonderful to have a think about how we can screen it at Kubu before the year is out as well. So we'll be in touch
Amazing,
about
thank
all
you
of
so
those things.
much. Thank you so much for the invitation. It's been really lovely to join you for this lunchtime conversation. I really appreciate being invited.